Rat Pack, where you at?
Hey, what's going on? It is Friday, December 13th. Yep, Friday the 13th. I guess it came early last night for a lot of us. Well then, that was quite a game. By the way, I'm Jeff. This is The Rant, ftnfantasy.com, promo code RATPACK for 10% off. But no dilly-dallying today. Let's dive right into it. Yeah, that was something else last night. We're going to preview all the remaining games, but I do want to talk about what we saw in a rainy game, in a game where there were no touchdowns. What a start to the fantasy football playoffs, huh? The Rams winning this 12-6. And honestly, you know, I think about weather conditions. You know, I always say there's a spectrum. It's not as if all weather games are created equally. The spectrum is, you know, the least impactful is snow. Now, if you're in the middle of a blizzard, like the snow's coming down, okay. But if there's snow on the field, even if it's like kind of light, it really doesn't have a major impact. In fact, we've seen some enormous games in the snow in the history of the league. I remember Brady had a big one. Obviously, a lot of people remember LeSean McCoy. Heck, even James Cook had a pretty big game. Josh Allen had a pretty big game in the snow. Then it gets a little bit worse when you get to rain. And when it's rain like this, that is not optimal. Like, the ball is just too slippery. You know, sometimes with the snow, you can actually kind of almost get a better grip on it. Like, it's wet but not slippery, you know, that type of grip. It was slippery. You know, you heard Tony Gonzalez talking about how you have to wear different gloves in this type of situation. We saw the quarterbacks not being able to make accurate throws, a lot of off-target throws by Brock Purdy in this one. And not that Stafford was perfect. I mean, he was a little bit better, but still, off-target throws all night. Then the worst condition would obviously be heavy wind, because then, you know, not only off target, but you like can't push the ball downfield whatsoever in heavy winds. And I'm talking like 20 plus mile an hour sustained type of winds, not 5 to 10 miles an hour. That's not a big deal. So it was not optimal. And, you know, really we got the run game, Kyren Williams, heavy volume, 29 carries, 108 yards. He caught 2 balls for 4 yards. I mean, all things considered, I guess that's not terrible, but it is a Derek Dilemma type game. He goes out, has, you know, 112 scrimmage yards, which in this contest was very important, but for fantasy, it really is not going to be that great. Puka Nacua, 7 for 97. I mean, he was fantastic. He was the best player on the field yet again, which is saying something, offensive player on the field, but saying something considering all of the stars that were out there. But you know, it's even a weird game when Matthew Stafford has 4 carries for 18 yards. Like, you know, it's a weird game. I know people are going to be upset over Cooper Kupp. These things happen. They happen. They happen in fantasy football. Now, the good news is if you played Cooper Kupp, and I did, I have him in a playoff. Not good, right? But if you played Cooper Kupp, well, you still have 15 more games. And I have seen teams get into a hole only to get out of that hole as the games go on. Like, you don't know what's going to happen, so don't bury your head. The glass is still half full. And if we lose, we lose. There's always going to be more fantasy football to play beyond this. Like, you can't win them all, and it's hard to win a fantasy championship. So, yeah, it sucks. I mean, hey, I'm not gonna be like, oh, that doesn't suck. No, that's great. No, it sucks. I could use a bunch of expletives right now, but I know that there are some kids who listen to this show. So, it sucks. It's not fun. But the show goes on. Now, on the other side, it's not as if your opponent was crushing. Obviously, Brock Purdy has a rough night. Kittle was okay. 4 for 61 probably will end up being a top 12 week, which is what he does. But from there, it was dreadful. Juwan Jennings has 9 targets. He catches 2 for 31. Debo Samuel, 3 for 16. You know, he did have an opportunity to potentially, have a longer touchdown, but he didn't catch it. He also tackled Isaac Garendo. Does he get points for that in an IDP league? I'm joking. Don't look that up. He does not get points for it. But Garendo, 16 for 57. I thought there were moments where he looked good, but he does at least salvage fantasy value in PPR because he caught 4 balls for 18 yards. So he gets you 5.8 there. You got 5.7 as a runner. It's not terrible. I ended up ranking him, I think, at 22, so maybe he's right in that range. Maybe he's a little lower. We don't know what this week's going to be. sometimes we'll get a hot start to the week on Thursday Night Football, and then the week isn't that crazy. Other times we'll get a slow start, and then the week goes bananas from there. You just don't know. And maybe the rest of your guys go bananas, but, you know, yelling, screaming, cursing, getting all worried, getting all upset. None of that works. You know, none of it works. I mean, maybe it makes a person feel better in the moment. I've been there, but we still have a job to do, you know, and even if you're an underdog now, it doesn't matter. The job is still the same. We want to maximize our rosters. All right. So let's move on. You know, hopefully this all improves from here. But the first game on the list here that I'm going to go with is Kansas City and Cleveland. And obviously with Mahomes, it hasn't been an optimal season. It hasn't been a peak Mahomes season, but it has gotten better to the point where I think we can use him as a QB1 this week with our fantasy lives on the line, the playoff lives on the line. I still think we can use him here. So I'm not overly concerned about him. The backfield is going to be interesting. Like, you know, you're using Kelce, and you probably know you're using Hopkins as a wide receiver 3. But the backfield, so Pacheco, since coming back, 21 carries for 99 yards. 4.7 per rush is not bad, but the overall, there hasn't been fantasy value here. But the good news is that while this might be a revenge game for Kareem Hunt, I think Pacheco is going to dominate the touches this week. And, you know, he's the play. He's the RB2, not Kareem Hunt. Over to the other side, I can't trust Jameis with my playoff life on the line. That's for sure. Outside of Superflex. Obviously, Superflex, you're going to use him. But too much for one quarterback leagues. It's just too volatile. Like, yes, he could go out and have a 400-yard game, and that wouldn't surprise anybody. He could also throw for a 150 and 4 interceptions, and that also wouldn't surprise anybody. It's that range of outcomes. It's like the Anthony Richardson argument. Do you really want to go down with that? And fortunately, I don't have Winston or Richardson in the top 12 this week, so we don't have to worry on that front, but just keep that in mind if you're sort of chasing his numbers. Jerry Judy's going to be fine. It looks like they could be without David Njoku, which that stinks. If you have David Njoku, you got to find somebody else. I talked about that on the podcast yesterday. But it's good for Jerry Jeudy, even with Tillman likely back this week. As far as the backfield, I can't use Nick Chubb or Jerome Ford with any confidence whatsoever. I would be trying to avoid that if I can. Cincinnati, Tennessee. So it's the Callahan revenge game here. So Joe Burrow has been phenomenal. And I don't think we realize maybe how phenomenal. Over the last four games, he stopped 300 passing yards and 3+ touchdowns in each. That is the tied for the second longest streak within a season since 1970. If he does one more, he will match the longest streak. That was Steve Young in 1998. Kind of crazy it was Steve Young, right? But yeah, man, in the late 90s, Steve Young, when he hit, oof, he was good. He was really stinking good, man. And he was like ahead of his time for fantasy with his ability to run. Now they all, well, not they all, but most of them have that ability. Most of these quarterbacks, especially coming into the league now. But regardless, 3,706 passing yards, 33 passing touchdowns. He's elite. Jamar Chase is elite. He's also doing stuff that is historic. He could be the next man up in terms of Triple Crown. We've seen it since 1970. The Triple Crown of receptions, receiving yards, and receiving touchdowns has been accomplished 4 times. It was Jerry Rice in 1990, Sterling Sharp in 1992, Steve Smith in 2005, and Cooper Kupp in 2021. Jamar Chase is that good. I mean, it's been incredible with him. And while T. Higgins may be more up and down, boom or bust, I think this is a great situation for him to go boom. So I actually have him as a top 12 option as well. And then Chase Brown, I mean, come on, top 10. He has been incredible since week 9, 123.4 scrimmage yards per game. That's third in the NFL, trailing only Saquon and, believe it or not, Jamar Chase. It's rare for a wide receiver to be averaging that many scrimmage yards, but Jamar Chase is doing it. On the other side, so we're keeping an eye on Tony Pollard. He went DNP, DNP. We have seen this out of Tony Pollard in the past. So I'm not going to jump to any conclusions until we get to practice reports today. Of course, when they come out Friday afternoons, I head, you know, into the back end over at ftnfantasy.com and update all of my projections to reflect all the latest information. If he goes DNP, yeah, we'd be up against it. But he did have 1 week this season where he went 3 straight DNPs and still played. So we're just going to have to wait and see. Have a plan for if he doesn't go and hope that he does go, right? From there, I can't use Will Levis, not even in Superflex. I like Calvin Ridley, and that's about it. You know, with Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, him and Marquez Valdes-Scantling, it's live by the touchdown, die by the touchdown. So if you're chasing those touchdowns, I mean, I don't know. It's too risky in fantasy for my liking, even as a flex option. Moving on to Washington and New Orleans. So Jaden Daniels rolling. He's a top 10 option, top five. Obviously, Terry McLaurin has been the biggest beneficiary. Here's what's crazy about Washington. McLaurin is on the threshold of you know, he's got 9 touchdowns, so he could hit double digits. The team has not had a player hit double-digit receiving touchdowns in 30 years. It's the third longest streak in NFL history. That's nuts. 30 years. He is also 104 receiving yards away from his fifth straight 1,000-yard season. I mean, that's awesome. This one should set up really well for Brian Robinson Jr. If you are, you know, looking at the lines to try and predict game script, which I like to do. You know, I like to use the lines to figure out what is this game going to look like. It doesn't always work. Obviously, nothing always works in fantasy football, but they're 7.5-point favorites. That sets up extremely well for Brian Robinson. So he's an RB2. Obviously, he's got to score touchdowns to be an RB1, you know, but I like him. I like him a lot as a top 20 play. You know, I wouldn't go too crazy here. Not getting cute. Not the week to get cute. Alvin Kamara, workhorse. He missed the first two practices, by the way, with illness. Not overly concerned about him, but again, we'll keep an eye on him today. But, you know, here's the challenge. Like, they have nobody. Nobody. They have Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Juwan Johnson. They have Jake Haener, who's going to likely start for him. It looks like that is, you know, it hasn't been reported by the team, but beat writers are saying that's who's going to be the starter. So opposing defenses know he's going to get the ball, but he can still generate, like, if he sees 25 touches, even if it's a blowout, he's going to catch a bunch of passes. He's going to be just fine. I don't love the situation. Like, if Derek Carr was here, this would be a different game. The spread would be a lot closer. It would set up a little bit better for Kamara, because you at least have a viable guy. I mean, maybe Haener surprises us, but, you know, who's holding their breath on that one? Either way, I would be higher on Kamara as of right now. I don't mind him as a – he's still a top 12, but he's more of a back-end RB1. Baltimore and the Giants. So the Giants are currently 16.5-point home dogs. Whoa. Wow. That's nuts. Lamar is awesome. Derrick Henry's awesome. You know that. Zay Flowers. So he has been outside the top 30 receivers in each of his last 4 games. I don't think we can view him as anything more than a boom or bust wide receiver 3. Now, he could go boom, but I don't know how much this game script will favor him, being that they're so heavily favored. Like, it's more of a Derrick Henry. It's more of a Lamar on the ground type of game. Well, even there, does he have to run that much? I'm still using Lamar regardless. Like, he's going to put points on the board. We know that. But Flowers can't be trusted as anything more than the wide receiver 3. And the same thing with Mark Andrews. Like, yes, I know he's been producing, you know, much better now than he did earlier. He has 3 top 10 performances over his last 6 games. But I'm not sure how much game script favors him if they do play from such a big lead. You know, the other side, the only players we can continue to trust here are Malik Nabers and Tyron Tracy. Nabers is still a wide receiver 2, even with Cutlets in there. Top 20, but barely. And then Tracy's kind of more of a fringe RB2, probably better viewed as a flex play. That's all we can do. Dallas and Carolina, pretty straightforward in this game. I mean, we're using CeeDee Lamb and Rico Dowdle. Rico Dowdle, back-to-back 100-yard rushing games. He had not hit that in his first 46. He gets a beautiful matchup, number one matchup for running backs. Love this spot for him. So he's going to be just fine. And CeeDee Lamb obviously is going to be fine, even with Cooper Rush under center. He's still a top 12 guy. He's not elite, but he's still top 12. To the other side, so Chuba is in a great spot. He's in a great, great, great spot. I actually have him top 5 right now, which is kind of crazy. But otherwise, I only want to trust Adam Thielen. And I have talked about Adam Thielen a bunch here recently. He's a 34-year-old wide receiver. I normally do not like older wide receivers at this time of year, but the beauty to him is he missed 2 months this season. So if he had been playing all those 2 months, yeah, the wear and tear of an NFL season at 34 years old, not optimal. Instead of being on the field, I mean, he was recovering from injury, which is not fun, but he didn't have the wear and tear of being out there on Sundays. You know, so I think you could get away with considering him maybe a fringe wide receiver 3. Like, I'm not going to go overboard with any of these guys. You know me. maybe you don't know me, but if you know me, I don't like to go overboard with these guys. So right now, Thielen, you know, knocking on the door, I guess, of wide receiver three territory is probably the best way to view it. Like, I'm just outside, but that's fine. He could be a wide receiver three for people. All right, moving on. Jets, Jacksonville, another straightforward game. Adams and Garrett Wilson. Aaron Rodgers has shown that he can do enough to make them wide receiver twos. He did it last week. The matchup is good for Rodgers. In fact, it's great for Rodgers, but given the injuries playing through, given, you know, how he's been this season, I don't want to use him if I can get away with it. Now, I may not be able to get away with it in Superflex where he is quarterback 24, but I'm not using him in one quarterback leagues. Looks like we're going to have another week without Breece. So no Breece Hall out there. Last week, we saw basically a 50-50 split between Braylon Allen and Isaiah Davis. I would expect that to continue, though. You know, I'm careful here because, yes, Davis had more fantasy points. Okay, cool. Last week, great. But Allen played more snaps. So it's not a clear cut, oh, Davis is just the better option. And in fact, I find some people in the FTN Discord who really want me to say, yes, go with Davis. And I'm not willing to do that. He's a flex play. I think Allen's also a flex play. But given what I would expect, or maybe he's an RB2, like a back end RB2. But given what I expect from game script, I do actually expect the Jets to have a lead in this one. And that sets up better for Allen than it does for Davis, but they're really close. You know, it's not as if, oh, it's a slam dunk, it's Allen, and that's it. On the other side, Mac Jones should do enough here for Brian Thomas Jr. to do his thing as a top 20. Evan Ingram to be a back end tight end one, I don't love it. And then if I desperately needed a running back, it would be Tank Bigsby, not ETN. This season was not good for ETN, but Bigsby's only a flex. Miami and Houston, kind of a start 'em if you got 'em game. Because all the options have such enormous ceilings. Like, Tua has a high ceiling, let's be clear. He doesn't offer the running ability, though, to move him into the top 12. I have him at 14. Like, I love everything about what he's doing, but I'm looking at this more from the angle of Tyreek Hill and even Jalen Waddle, who's like an upside wide receiver three, obviously Jonnu Smith, and Devon Achane. That's all I'm really looking at here, and this should be a bit of a shootout, hopefully. On the other side, so CJ Stroud, I know it's tough. Let the lesson be learned, though. Try to avoid quarterbacks in the middle rounds. It's just usually a bad strategy. Next year, I will be labeling that as a dead zone for quarterbacks. So I always avoid them in the middle rounds, but there's just too much downside to it. And Stroud showed it. Like, Stroud isn't bad. He's not, you know, taking a step back this season. He's a second-year quarterback who lost his top receiver and then lost his second receiver. I mean, what do you expect, right? But with Nico Collins on the field, Stroud completes 67% of his passes, 266.4 passing yards per game. With him off the field, he completes 56% of his passes, 197.2 yards per game. So you're talking, he drops, what, like 70 yards basically and 11 percentage points. Like, that's crazy. That is absolutely crazy. So the good news is Collins is playing, and Stroud actually is a top 12 option. Barely, but he is there. As far as Collins is concerned, he's elite. 104 receiving yards per game. If you extrapolated that over the course of an entire season, you're talking about nearly 1,800 yards, 1,768. It's insane. That would be a Texans single season record, by the way. And it's not as if they've had chump change at wide receiver over the course of their, you know, they're not the oldest franchise out there, obviously, but they've had some pretty good receivers over the years. Thinking of one in Andre Johnson and another in DeAndre Hopkins. So that's pretty impressive stuff there out of Collins. Obviously, Joe Mixon is rolling. As far as Tank Dell, I think we probably know where we are, but he's just a flex play. You know, risk reward. Indianapolis and Denver. I mentioned Richardson earlier. Yes, he's a top 20 guy, but he is not a top 12 guy this week. Too much for me to use him as a QB1 with my playoff life on the line. And honestly, his play, boom or bust as it is, will impact Michael Pittman, who's not a flex play, and Josh Downs, who's barely a flex play for me. I have Downs at 46, Pittman at 49. 48 is the cutoff for flex plays for wide receivers for me. Most weeks, not always, but you know, that's the end of the wide receiver four. So I view, if you're a wide receiver four, you could potentially be a flex play. If you're outside of that, I really don't want to use you. Jonathan Taylor actually only needs 102 yards to become the Number two all-time in Colts history in terms of rushing yards, it would be Lydell Mitchell, who he has to pass. He will not pass Edgerrin James. Like, he won't even get close. But second all-time is not bad. He averages 110.1 rushing yards per game in December or later. That is the most in NFL history. He's a gamer at this time of year. He's top 15 play this week. Bo Nix, hey, I love the rookie season, and I'm going to use him as a top 12 play. I'm actually using him ahead of Richardson. He's been rock solid, man. You know, I'm not saying he's foolproof, he can't miss, but given what he's been able to do, given the circumstances of this game, I mean, Denver needs to keep winning. You know, they want to make the playoffs, especially against a team that could flip a game on them, like gain a game. They're two games behind Indianapolis, two games behind. They flip a game, all of a sudden, this is much tighter with three games to go. Don't like that. Got to win here. So I like Bo Nix, obviously loving Courtland Sutton. Quietly, he just tiptoed his way into wide receiver one territory. Avoid the backfield like the plague. Buffalo, Detroit. Another stardom if you got him. Josh Allen, duh. Khalil Shakir, duh. Amari Cooper, now for me, duh. Double-digit targets last week. Love that. Season-high 95 receiving yards in that game. He should be heavily used again, even with Keon Coleman back in the mix. We're not using Keon Coleman. James Cook, well, he has slowed a little bit. Now, last week, they only had six running back carries in that game when they played from behind, and he had all six. But him slowing a little bit pushed him to back end RB2 territory. And I'm going to try and avoid Dalton Kincaid if I can. As far as Jared Goff is concerned, it's good enough here to be a fringe quarterback one option. You know, he doesn't offer much with his legs, but this does figure to be a bit of a shootout. And we saw what Matthew Stafford was able to do against him last week. Amon-Ra in a slump, I don't care. Obviously still using him. David Montgomery, Jahmyr Gibbs. Yeah, you know the answers to that question. So the next game is almost the polar opposite, even though it's just as intriguing in terms of the teams involved with Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. But this one, given the defenses involved, Pittsburgh's obviously been the cream of the crop for most of the season, whereas Philly, it continues to really turn it up, you know? So in this contest, I don't expect a lot of offense. Like, obviously, if I have Saquon, A.J. Brown, Jalen Hurts, firing them up. But I'm not using Russell Wilson in Superflex even. It's a tough matchup, and he doesn't look like he's going to have George Pickens. So Najee Harris is kind of the only show in town for Pittsburgh that I'm starting with any confidence in. It's only as a flex. So it's a totally different contest there. I wouldn't get all panicky over all of this, but you can't use most of these guys with confidence in this one. You know, using, obviously, as I said, Saquon and Jalen Hurts. And I'm not worried about the Jalen Hurts, A.J. Brown stuff. I'm still using him as a top 10 guy. All right, New England, Arizona. Well, there isn't much on the New England side. I love Drake May. I think Drake May is going to be great, especially next year when he's throwing to T. Higgins. I really hope that happens. But in this contest, I can only use him as a super flex. Like, I really like Hunter Henry as a high floor back end tight end one. And Ramondre Stevenson, like, this is not actually a bad matchup for him. He's a very touchdown dependent fantasy asset, but this is a game where he could score some touchdowns, no doubt about it. But moving to the other side, so Kyler Murray is so volatile, and I get if you're concerned about that, but it also is something to maybe note for the future. Like, if you really haven't liked rostering him, then you probably are the type of fantasy manager who just can't handle boom or bust players, so just stay away from those types. Make sure in fantasy drafts you're aware of who the boom or bust guys are and just like highlight them or cross them off or whatever, and just don't draft them because there's no sense in it. I know, like, some people are going to come back at me and be like, how can you just give out such crappy advice? But I really obviously don't think it's crappy. I think this is all about helping people play better. And not everybody's going to play the same way. You know, that's why I often say, like, sometimes people will be like, well, what would Jeff do here? And it's like, well, you're not Jeff, unless your name's Jeff, and in which case you are Jeff, but you're not me, Jeff. And so it doesn't matter what I would do. What matters more than what I would do is how I would go about deciding it. That's what this game's really all about. Fantasy football, it's a game of knowledge. It's a game of decisions. You make too many wrong decisions, you're not going to win a fantasy championship, right? You put yourself in a position to make bad decisions, you're probably going to make bad decisions. Like, numerous things. Like, that's why I often recommend not rostering two quarterbacks in one quarterback leagues after you get outside of that first month of the season or so, because you're putting yourself in a position where you could probably make bad decisions. So it's about that. It's about the decision-making process. It's about setting yourself up for success. And part of that also is playing within the confines of your own personality. If you're the type of person, you just cannot handle like Cooper Kupp last night. Not that he historically has been a boomer bust player, but if you can't handle the boomer bust players when they go bust, then just don't roster the boomer bust players and you're going to be a better player as a result. You know, that's the advice. And when it comes to Kyler Murray, he is that. He's a top 10 guy, but he could just as easily be top five this week or outside of the top 20. In theory, it's a nice matchup. He has Trey McBride. Obviously, we're using him. Trey McBride has the fourth most receptions in a single season without a touchdown in NFL history. He does have a rushing touchdown, but no receiving touchdowns. It's wild. 80 catches, no touchdowns. Marvin Harrison Jr. is kind of like the same thing as Kyler, boomer bust. Whereas James Conner is probably closer to Trey McBride, much more consistent and actually a really nice matchup for him as well. Tampa and the Chargers, fascinating contest. Both these teams looking like they're headed towards the playoffs. It's a tough matchup for Baker. It's not a tough matchup for Justin Herbert. Actually, a very favorable. Technically, on paper, the Bucs are the number one matchup, not the Jags anymore. So I like Herbert as a top 12 play. I do not want to use Baker as a top 12 play. I'll use him in Superflex. Their backfield is interesting. So Bucky Irving currently looks like he isn't going to play. Like, he hasn't practiced yet. We already kind of heard from the coaching staff that it seems likely he's not going to play. They said they need the back to loosen up. It's usually, if you have to preface it that early in the week, then that dude's not playing. But I'm not using Sean Tucker as a replacement. Like, Rashad White moves into RB2 territory. Very nice play in this one. Tucker's dicey. Like, we almost need him to score a touchdown. I'm not saying he can't score a touchdown, but I just don't want to bank on that. Mike Evans not practicing as well, but I'm more confident in him. He has a potential record he's chasing here, a tie for a record, but still an amazing record at that. And this is a team that's making a playoff push. So, you know, we'll see what happens today with this practice report. But he could even play even if he goes DNP again. Cade Otton, back end tight end one, especially, by the way, as I was recording this, news came out that Evan Engram is going to miss the rest of the season. So a little add on. I honestly recorded the Jacksonville part before that news came out. So we cannot use him. And Cade Otton moves, you know, he's locked in as a top 12 as a result. He was right on the fringe. They were both right on the fringe. And now he's locked in. Over to the other side, other than Herbert, I'm avoiding the backfield if I can. It's Gus Edwards if I must, but only as a low ceiling flex option. I don't like that. We'll keep an eye on McConkey. He could go limited the entire week and not play. So he's already been limited in the first two practices. Stay tuned. Could be another game time decision. If he doesn't go, then Quentin Johnston is my slight preferred over Josh Palmer. He'd be a wide receiver three play. And Stone Smart is a sneaky tight end option with Will Disley sidelined right now. I don't mind the Stone Smart play, especially if you're up against it. Maybe you had Njoku, maybe you had Evan Engram. I don't mind it at all. Green Bay, Seattle. So tough matchup for Jordan Love. Seattle has not given up a 300-yard passer this season. They've also only allowed three passing touchdowns to one quarterback, Brock Purdy, in week six. That's it. That's the most they've given up, two, one, or none the rest of the games. So Love is on the outside looking in. He's not a QB1. He's a super flex option. Jaden Reed remains a boomer bust. He's the best option, but he's a wide receiver three, and we know what the downside is there. Josh Jacobs is really the guy I have the most confidence in for obvious reasons. Seven touchdowns in his last three games. To the other side, I don't know about Walker yet, but I don't think he plays. If he does not play, Zach Charbonnet is a top 12 option. Geno Smith, high floor, low ceiling. Super flex, right? And then between DK and Jackson Smith and Jigba, I mean, it's close. They're back-to-back in my rankings right now. They offer different things. Smith and Jigba has a nice ceiling, but his floor is way higher than DK. DK has one of the highest ceilings in all of football. But will he hit that in this game? I mean, that's the question here. I always love when these two teams face each other. It should be a fun one, but they're both wide receiver twos. Chicago, Minnesota. So Caleb Williams, 255 consecutive passing attempts without an interception. That's pretty awesome. This is a tough spot, but he actually threw the ball around the yard on these guys a little bit the last time they faced each other. That was when you had DJ Moore do well, Keenan Allen did well. Roman Dunze didn't do that much in that one, but that's still the order we prefer them in. Moore as a front-end wide receiver three, Allen back-end, and then back-end wide receiver three, and then, of course, You have Adunze as a flex. Now, we only have one day of practice reports as I'm recording this. I don't know what happens with Swift, but I think he ultimately plays. And I am actually very concerned for Roshan not playing again. Even with the extra day, he still went DNP in concussion protocol the first practice of the week. That's usually not a good sign if the guy missed the previous week. Remember, he had a concussion earlier in the year. Darnold should have no issue here. Now, the last time they faced each other, they shadowed Justin Jefferson. Don't panic. Darnold threw away from that coverage to Jordan Addison and TJ Hawkinson. Second time around isn't going to be the same as the first. I think Jefferson's just fine. Addison actually moves up to fringe wide receiver two territory. We're locking Hawkinson in. And Aaron Jones, even though he doesn't have a ton of volume, is still a very solid top 20 RB. Atlanta, Vegas, Desmond Ridder revenge game here. Ridder can do enough for Brock Bowers. No issues there. Brock Bowers is still an elite option. He can do enough for Jacoby Myers to be a wide receiver three, and he should move the football enough that Sincere McCormick is a flex play. Like, currently I'm at 31. A couple of players may come out of rankings or move around in rankings, but he's going to be like a mid-range flex, which isn't bad given, you know, you got him for, hopefully you didn't have to pick him up this week. Most people got him for cheap off of waivers the week before that. Over to the other side. So Kirk Cousins, zero passing touchdowns, 8 interceptions over his last 4 games. He has 15 picks on the season. This is one, though, where he should be able to get it done. He should be able to be just fine with Drake London as a top 10 option. Darnell Mooney as a top 30-ish option. Mooney, technically, I'm at 32. So he's like right there in wide receiver 3 territory. If you can't get it done here, I don't know when you're going to get it done. If you can't get it done here, if you're Atlanta, if you somehow lose this game, you almost have to figure Michael Penix gets serious consideration. But I'm going to give him one more chance. I love Bijan Robinson, top 5 play. And I'm going to believe Ted Lasso style here in Kirk Cousins. Oh, boy. Famous last words. I'm not using Kirk Cousins, by the way, outside of deep super flex. But I'm going to believe in him for Drake London and Darnell Mooney's sake, not for Kyle Pitts' sake, okay? All right, that wraps it up. That's the entire slate. It's a long one today, like I told you it was going to be. So final words here. If you're in a hole after last night, you're not alone. I'm right there with you, and a lot of us are. If you're in a hole, it could cause you to do some crazy things. Resist the temptation. I've seen crazy things happen in fantasy, and I'm fully anticipating a lot of people on Monday morning sending me pictures on social media of how they thought they were dead to rights after Cooper Kupp gave them a zero, or Debo Samuel crapped the bed, or Brock Purdy did this, and they ended up winning. I'm fully prepared for that. Stay the course. Trust the process. Don't freak out too. Just try and relax until Sunday. I know it's tough, but do your normal stuff, man, and don't let it get to you, because if it gets to you, you're going to make bad decisions and could compound the problem. In the meantime, go check out ftnfantasy.com, promo code RATPACK for 10% off. On social media, I'm at Jeff Ratcliffe on Twitter/X, at Jeff Ratcliffe on Instagram, at Jeff Ratcliffe on Blue Sky. Enjoy the weekend, man. Seriously, you got this, all right? I'll catch you on the flip on Monday. Until then, I'm Jeff, and I'm out.